party is over. You came with your new friends and her mom jeans and her new Vans, and she's perfect and I hate it. Oh, so glad you made it. I'm so glad you could come back. Somebody get the tacos. Somebody spark the blunt. Let's start the narcos off at episode one. Bring the gin, got the juice. Bring the sin, got that too. Won't you shut up? No, you're my favorite. Myself think I need therapy.
I'm sorry I'm not more attractive. I'm sorry I'm not more ladylike. I'm sorry I don't shave my legs at night. I'm sorry I'm not your baby mama. I'm sorry you got karma coming to you. Collect your soul, get it right.
To me like you say you do, 'cause it's hard enough you got to treat me like this, lonely enough to let you treat me like this. Do you really love me or just wanna love me down?
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is In the Motherhood for April 21st, 2021. My name is Robin Fadden. I'll be your host tonight. We're going to talk about a few things. Some of them have to do with theater. We're going to be talking with the artistic director of Geordi Theater, and as well as psychotherapist and theater therapist Lisa Nedejuru, and about a new play and an associated workshop series for Black youth that Geordi Theater is putting together with Desta here in Montreal. And I'm also going to mention a couple of other things right now, like Infinite Theater's The Right Stuff playwriting competition for youth. And submissions just opened April 1st, and there's still time for anybody, any young person, if you are listening or have a child who is interested in writing plays, if they're between the ages of 12 and 18 here in Quebec, they can submit a first draft to Infinite Theater's playwriting contest. And you can find out more about Infinite Theater at infinitetheater.com. So that's an interesting opportunity to get involved in a creative art, but also in the community, in the artistic community of Montreal at a very young age. So that's fun. And there's also Blue Metropolis's Children's Festival, which starts this weekend, April 24th and 25th, and again next weekend, May 1st and 2nd. And that involves some French language authors and English language authors who are going to present their works virtually on the Blue Metropolis website. And they're going to be reading from their books, and it's going to be pretty lively for kids of all ages, really. So you can find out more about that on the Blue Metropolis Children's Festival, Literary Festival website. And funnily enough, the weekend is also International World Book Day, so crack a book. And it's also Canadian Independent Bookstore Day, so go to an independent bookstore. Thanks for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. And yeah, it's a little past 6 p.m. on this weirdly snowy Wednesday. Thanks for listening. On today's In the Motherhood, we're talking about Jordy Theatre's world premiere of the play Virginia Woolf, and that's happening from May 7th to 16th online. And it's also a workshop series that's related very much to the play's themes, and it's addressing the issues of mental health in youth. The workshop series is in collaboration with Montreal's DESTA Black Youth Network. So you can find out more about the workshop and about the play Virginia Woolf at jordy.ca. That's jordie.ca. So I would like to welcome Mike Payette, the artistic director of Jordy Theatre and director of the newest production, Virginia Woolf. Welcome.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Lisa Dejuru, who is a psychotherapist and a theater therapist. Welcome to In the Motherhood.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So first, I wanted to start with you, Mike. Jordy Theatre is celebrating its 40th season this year. Congratulations. And you're celebrating with the production of Virginia Woolf. Virginia Woolf is by playwright Cole Lewis, which is an adaptation from a Governor General's award-winning children's story. What is the story that the play takes us on, and how is it different from the book in terms of how theater can address the issues that are in the story and how a book addresses them differently? And what is the dialogue that that the production opens?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the adaptation is by Cole Lewis, and the images within the adaptation are by Clelia Scala. And yes, it is a Gigi winning children's book by Kiel McClare, who wrote it several years ago. And the basis of the foundation of the book stems from the real life relationship between Virginia Woolf and her older sister, Vanessa. Historically, we know that Virginia Woolf suffered from mental illness. She was diagnosed, and it led to essentially towards the end of her life. However, this is a children's story. And so what Kiel McClare is putting forward is pulling the essence of that relationship of two sisters, one who is in a wolfish mood, who's having a bad day, has started experiencing these sort of dark emotions and doesn't really know how to frame them. And so the book itself is a navigation between her, Virginia, and her older sister, who's trying to understand. Vanessa, who takes on the role of caregiver. We get to see the story of these two sisters who are seemingly from opposing ends of understanding what is going on. Vanessa tries, she fails at times. You know, these are kids at the end of the day. I have to say that it's quite important that the characters are young. They're not the adult characters. And in the story, and as well as the adaptation, we are not depicting a period piece in replicating the real Virginia Woolf's life, but we are inspired by that. The adaptation itself has taken the book and really exploded the conversation of mental health as it relates to young people. And so because Jordy is a theater for a young audience's company, all of the shows that we do have to come from a young person's perspective, even though we are centering some perhaps adult themes. But seeing it through a young person's perspective really creates an immediacy and gives agency to the youth and charging them with the conversations that happen after the play. The story itself, we have Virginia on this day. She's not feeling very good. Vanessa's coming in and she wants to essentially get her sister to play outside. Virginia is not having it. And she talks about wanting to escape to a place called Bloomsbury. Now, Bloomsbury is an actual place, but the notion of Bloomsbury in the story and in the play is a fictional place where Virginia feels safe. And so what Vanessa tries to do through creativity and imagination and through visual art is literally take paint and create the scope, the scale of Bloomsbury and brings it into Virginia's bedroom so that she can see light, see possibility, and perhaps escape the darkness that she actually feels. Over the course of the quest, there are, you know, ebbs and flows of success of making that work. But by the end of it, it becomes a coming of age and a coming together of two sisters who finally get to understand each other, not trying to change each other, but trying to actually create listening and understanding and tolerance about the feelings that we have. It's not a question about squashing those feelings. It's about what can we do to move through them and to actually create that acceptance of someone who might be going through them. So it's one of the most beautiful scripts that I've read since my time at Geordie, and it's been a couple of years since we've been trying to put it on because we wanted to get it done for the start of the pandemic, but we had to delay it. But finally, we're giving it its world premiere.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Why produce it this year? It sounds like it's been long in the making, though.
That's right. Originally, it was developed in partnership. The adaptation was developed with another theater for young audiences company in St. Catharines, Ontario, called Carousel Players, with dramaturg Jessica Carmichael at that time. And she brought the script towards me, and it was like, oh my goodness, okay, this is a story that needs to be told at that point. And this was pre-pandemic. We know that with the scope of information and the various crises that young people are navigating in today's world, again, pre-COVID, the story already had a certain relevance, but now more than ever, and I use that term quite often during this time, but I'll say it again, especially for this story, more than ever, our youth are in a very precarious place. What is it that we can do through theater, through art, to have this discourse of mental health, which is often taboo, generally speaking, but particularly for youth and marginalized communities? And so here we have an opportunity to bring a story that encourages the conversation through theater. And so that ties in a lot in terms of the partnership that we have with DESTA, that it's not just about the art, but what is the social impact of the story itself?
It's interesting that it's an online a digital production, as it were, because often with Geordie and other theater for young people, there's a talk back session at the end. What was your experience in directing this play, first of all, and how was there a point where you wanted to incorporate a talk back session or some kind of conversation that can happen alongside it?
Absolutely. I mean, the talkbacks are still happening. So although it is a filmed theatrical experience, we're still including or welcoming our artists to come back at the end of the shows. We also to speak directly about what the experience was for the students and for families. There are also, again, with the work that we're doing with Lisa and Desta, that it really is a full sort of package experience, so that the community engagement is more than just the talk back itself. It's like, what can we use Virginia Woolf as a platform for social engagement through theater? It's been a real pleasure diving into the story. Again, it's so beautiful. I will say, though, that, you know, in the first day of rehearsal or first couple of days of rehearsal, and we started 2 weeks ago, it was a fascinating eye opener for everybody that was in the room. First of all, we wanted to create a sort of context document of like what we wanted our rehearsal space or this process to reflect in the creating of our own Bloomsbury. So what are the sort of values that we want to, you know, bring into the process that can allow for the artists to do their work, but also recognizing that we're human beings as well. You know, we've all gone through some hard times and we continue to go through them. And so to dive into a piece that talks about mental health without actually responding and paying attention to or creating a bridge for the folks that are in the room diving into those stories, it became absolutely necessary to put that at the forefront. And that has allowed us to be really kind to each other in the rehearsal hall. In tech, we started tech today. And it's really underlined the the importance of this story in reminding us that, you know, as much as we try to stay strong, that there are moments that we can allow ourselves to embrace, you know, the heavier times, and knowing that there's a community of people, supporters that can back us up. And that is the rehearsal hall. That's what theater does.
It's a process in itself, for sure, especially when you're talking about subjects that are heavy or subjects that we don't talk about that often. And many people aren't very practiced in talking about.
Absolutely. And I will say that to dive into this kind of conversation is, it takes a lot of, certainly a lot of respect for our audience. We don't want to create any harm, certainly. And so the device in which this story is told, again, is through a younger lens, a young person's lens. So imagination and creativity and the actual fabrication of the environment that Virginia is craving, we see that before our eyes. And so the hope is that it gives audiences, gives our young people and our families who may have some sort of connection to the story, a way, a mechanism for them to practically not only have the conversation, but tools that you can move forward outside of the additional resources that we're offering for like counseling support, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, when we think about theater, it's, you know, words and dialogue, but there's a visual aspect to this, especially because it is a digital production and that we're watching on a screen, and so much is needed to keep people's attention, especially children's or young people's attention when looking at a screen. Can you tell me a little bit about the visual component and the artistry in that?
Yeah, we look at this piece as a sensorial sort of experience, is that the dialogue itself, a lot of the dialogue is driven by Vanessa, who's in this investigation of trying to connect with her sister, Virginia. And so Virginia speaks in growls most of the time. But you're absolutely right, there is an absolutely stunning visual element because Bloomsbury is being made before our eyes. So there's a really awesome video design component. Our designer is Amelia Scott, and she's done some terrific work of bringing a lot of the images that we see in the book itself, as well as using our own imagination and creating what our version of Bloomsbury is within this room. But music is also really important. There is an auditory experience, certainly, that in the moments of tension or in the moments of beauty and escape and light, that we have an accompaniment of music that supports those feelings, so that music and the visuals really guide our experience, so that in the moments where we're like not too sure, there's perhaps scary moments, we're comforted by the environment, the sensorial environment that is taking place. And that has been really important for the process, because again, there might be some young people who will identify quite heavily with this piece. And so how can we ensure that we're creating a container within the production that supports them and allows them to stay with us?
That safety zone when thinking about and talking about these kinds of issues, and that when kids start relating to them, they start talking, they start having questions, and they want to ask them. Hopefully they want to talk.
Absolutely. And we, at the end of the day, the most successful sort of outcome would be to keep the young people talking about what it is that they're experiencing, because conversations are being had within younger communities, but it's often the adults in their lives that don't know how to navigate. And so with not unlike all of the work that Jordy does, is that this is a bridge between, yes, a young person's story, but the means for their families, the adults in their lives, to be able to enter into the discourse about their experiences, which is an awesome thing, which is absolutely one of the most beneficial, impactful aspects of theater and art.
Yes, I love that. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about the play Virginia Woolf. Thanks so much, Mike Payette, director of Virginia Woolf and artistic director of Jordy Theater.
Thank you, Robin.
Now I'm going to speak with Dr. Lisa DeJuru about the workshop series that is related to the themes of the play Virginia Woolf by Jordy Theater. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for speaking with me about this workshop series that right now it's for 10 people and it's happening at the same time that the play is happening. Can you tell me a little bit about what brought you to work with Geordie Theatre in the context of this production?
Mike actually reached out and said, would you be interested in doing this, in doing this thing? And he told me about the play that he was that they were working on, and he told me about his collaboration with Desta, and I have a lot of admiration for the work that Desta does, and I am always in when it's about young Black mental health and success. That is very much. Yeah, that's very, very important to me.
Mm-hmm. You're coming from a background in psychotherapy, but also in performance therapy or theater therapy.
There is drama therapy. It is a craft profession. I'm not a drama therapist. I'm a psychodramatist, which is a subset of drama therapy. Is a large éventail of approaches in drama using performance-based techniques for psychotherapy. I have trained in one that is called psychodrama that was developed by Moreno in the 40s. I've also worked a lot with life stories and performance, so arts-based approaches to life stories. That's what I've been doing for the past, I guess, 2 decades. Those are some of the things that are really interesting. I find that working with the arts allows us to work with challenging stories in really interesting ways. It opens up very many different spaces, many different possibilities there.
People can talk about their life experiences.
Yeah, it provides a container.
Down. Yeah, mm-hmm. Different
absolutely.
Than sitting down with a therapist.
Absolutely. Yeah, and working together is also something that is, I find, really interesting, as opposed to sitting like one-on-one, where it becomes very much a dialogic thing, which is also interesting. But I find that a lot of these issues that we're facing can be, there's something about the group process that is really, really interesting and allows us to a different perspective.
So how did you conceptualize how the workshops would look with Desta, Black Youth Network, and with Geordie? How did that process happen? Or was it you alone? I figure there was a lot of collaboration involved.
There was a lot of collaboration. I don't love to work by myself. I rather collaborate. And we worked with Mike and with Michael at Geordie as well. And we worked with the play or the themes of the play, but then also, and maybe more specifically with this, with this intention, right? Like, what do we want these series to allow for these young people, right? One of the things, like we spent a lot of time thinking, like, what was the intention? What do we want people to leave with, right? We have a 4-workshop sort of moment there. And what do we want people to go through in this container, in this sequel? And so that's what we played with, played with in a way. Imagine together.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you imagined it might look like? I know it might look different in person, but...
Yeah, it looks completely different in person. So what I love about this play is the way in which the sister listens to the sister who's not feeling well, right? Mm-hmm. And she wants to, she tries and she reaches for, right? And so this sort of listening, this really sort of leaning in and listening, is a thing that you want to encourage for yourself, right? Like this almost like the benevolent witness, right? Within, like, that's what you want to encourage in yourself, and that is also what you want to encourage in other people, right? Like, when we're talking about these kinds of things, it's instead of the pushing away or the fear of that which is unmanageable, dark, or inner, right? It is this sort of leaning in and the care of the tending to, right? That is, that I find really, really interesting. And so there's a demystifying. There's also an exploration of different ways. Like what could be a Bloomsbury? What could your Bloomsbury be, right? Like what are those places that hold your values, or the symbols that hold value for you, right? And that when activated in your life, move you, right? And move you further or towards your own self in a way, right? Towards what is dear to you. And so thinking about different ways to get in contact with the self, with those core values that we hold, etc.
Right, right. It's interesting, you know, thinking about the play, which I haven't seen yet, but thinking about it not only as two different people, but two parts of oneself kind of in battle, you know, which happens for most people, you know, what is right? What do I do? You know, what's social? What's anti? So all of these questions that we constantly ask ourselves. And it's amazing that you're going to get to tackle these questions within a safe workshop space with people who are, is it between the ages of 18 and 22 or 24? Like,
so they're young adults, mm-hmm. for sure. They're not children anymore. Yeah. But they're young people. Yeah. And they're in their 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. And are they going to watch the play first and then go into the workshop? How is the play?
No, I think the play comes in the third, like second to last, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not like welded to the play. It's their own process, right? Like that is what they're signing up for. They're signing up for a process of their own, you know? Yeah.
And the play is part of that conversation, part of that process.
Yeah, it's part of the conversation, yeah.
Well, that is how most art and theater acts in our lives, isn't it?
We don't
say, I'm watching a play, now I'm going to answer these deep mental health questions about life. No, it inspires questions, it inspires dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's these beautiful symbols, right? And symbols, they allow for so many places to go, right? They're so rich in terms of interpretation. You can, a symbol is like, when we hold symbols, they're almost like a lock and a key, right? Like these ideas, these multifaceted sort of ways in and out of there. So I think those are really, really important. When, for example, in the process, somebody starts speaking in images, for me as a therapist, we're going places, because then you can start, you know, then you can start playing with these images, because these images then are invested with meaning, right? And so if you shift them, you're shifting something else as well, right? They carry stuff. So it's very, very interesting.
Yes. And that's fascinating, because, you know, in the context of theater, drama, therapy, and storytelling, and creating scenes that are related to your life, but not necessarily exposing yourself, perhaps. That sort of says, yes, we are going somewhere, because you're telling your story, but you're not being forced to reveal things that you don't want to.
I think that the idea is really, really to create a safe space, to create a space together, right, where people can work, what each person works on their own process, but in a common space, right? And with this play, or this idea underneath, like holding it all together, mm-hmm. I think that is going to make for a really beautiful opportunity. Yeah, we're that. Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
And these workshops are going to happen online, of course. Things haven't changed. But what will a typical workshop look like then? There's a trajectory, as you explained. But how are you going to get people comfortable together in that, you know, screen space?
They don't have to run around.
But screen place is nice. Look, if we were to move a little bit, right? And we start moving. If you followed me, mm-hmm. and then if I followed you, right? If you started something, and then we, there we go. Right. And then, yeah, right? There we go. All of a sudden, we're somewhere else, right? If I'm this and I hand it over to you, then you.
Oh, then I grab
something, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yes. If you are an adult, then I feel more comfortable with it. Children, you need to be, I mean, for me anyway, I feel I need to be in this space to be able to hold whatever is coming. I don't feel so comfortable. But with adults, yeah.
Yeah, you can do that's a whole other show.
Little squares, right?
Yeah, yeah. A whole other show is about children and, and screen communication. But yeah,
yeah.
My last question is, because I see we're running out of time, but how is talking about mental illness or mental health issues in a theater or performance workshop different than talking about them in a more formal, like, educational setting or traditional therapy setting, which we sort of talked about already? What are the things that this kind of workshop can draw out that other education or therapy can't?
I think that when you're working with, when you're working with this creative piece, right, you're working with the possibility of someone being willing to go on a journey, right? Like the creative piece of it, right? You're already in a realm that is closer to this possibility of going inward than when you are outside. Right, like the creative spaces are. In creative spaces, we're closer to ourselves already, right? Like this vulnerability is part of what you need to get to where you want to go, and I find that I also find that beauty holds these some of the more difficult things, allows to hold it nicely, right? Like. Ritual allows that too. And so there are old sort of relationships between art and mental health, expression, reception, the inner work, imagination, spontaneity. All these things are easily part of both worlds, and you can go back and forth. I think there's definitely purpose in sort of clear boundaries between them, but there is also really, really good. What can I say? There's it tastes really good in the in between as well.
Right, the process of it, and I do have one last question, of course, because all of the people who are going to be in this workshop are from the Black community. And what are the are there specific needs that you've identified, or is it simply that these workshops aren't always available to the Black community, and especially a workshop that is only for Black people, and so that those needs are really specifically addressed in this space?
Yeah. I think that it's important. When we were talking with Mike, there was a real sort of happiness in thinking that we are taking care of our younger sort of people and holding some of the things that might maybe be difficult to talk about in other kinds of spaces, and to really, really tend to what is going on for them at that time. That is, I think, what we want to do, and to be able to also be able to identify with us, with each other, I think those are spaces that are not always available as minorities in a majority space, right? So I think that it's a love thing. Like, it's about loving on our young people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And really listening to them, and like, what is love, right? But listening to each other and letting ourselves open up with each other and be vulnerable, as you said already.
Yeah. 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 And sort of not be afraid, you know, like, and learning not to be afraid. Like, if we are, if we can model this sort of the patience and the sort of the compassion, the willingness to be there as this thing happens, then maybe that is something that you can take in for yourself for yourself, right? Those are the things that are, I think, important, because when you think about a lot of the issues around mental health, like half of it is the suffering, but then there's all of the things that we say to ourselves when we do suffer, right? Like what we make that mean about ourselves. And it doesn't need to mean anything else than that we're suffering and that we're going to look for help that we're going to take care of ourselves to feel better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you. And there's a whole social aspect and cultural aspect to that too.
Absolutely.
You know, that I'm sure is going to come up in the workshops.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. And I'm really glad that this opportunity has been made available here in Montreal.
It's so much fun. I hope we have more.
That's what I was going to say. I hope there are more and in the future. And I'm glad to hear that Jordy is, you know, on the forefront of doing these kinds of projects.
They are so amazing. Yeah,
it's true.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great. And I look forward to, you know, seeing some of the results of these workshops and just hearing about how they went perhaps. But thank you so much. And thanks for being on In the Motherhood, and have a great night.
Thank you. Okay. Take good care.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye.
And that was an interview with Mike Payette at the start there. He's the artistic director of Jordy Theatre and the director of Jordy Theatre's newest production, Virginia Woolf, which will be available to watch online from May 7th to 16th. And I also talked to Dr. Lisa DeGiuro, who is a psychotherapist and theatre therapist, who is heading up the workshop series that's in association with the play Virginia Woolf. So if you'd like to know more about that, you can go to Jordy Theatre's website at jordy.ca. And again, that's happening sort of the middle of May, May 7th to 16th. And there may be still room in the workshop series. So that's great. And I'm going to now skip ahead to a bit of a borrowed content from the radio show Wings. And they did a show for International Women's Day and is sort of skipping around the world talking about gender issues and activism and hopes for the future. So I wanted to play a bit about that at the end of the show. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Bianca Miglioretto produces women's programming at Radio Laura in Zurich, Switzerland. She collected International Women's Day greetings and updates from women around the world to air on March 8th, International Women's Day 2021. And she shared the recordings with Wings.
Hello, my name is Nimi Chauhan and I'm from India. Greetings to all the gender equality champions, especially those who identify themselves as women on this International Women's Day. I know I may not see a gender equal and a gender just world in my lifetime, but I will definitely continue to push the boundary to the best of my ability every single day of my life. As I was reflecting on what issues I would like to speak about in my message to you, I realized that as women, we are constantly struggling and negotiating for our choice, our voice, and our safety. In my country and many other countries around the world, women still cannot exercise their choice for something as trivial as owning a mobile phone and something as crucial as choosing to marry a partner of their choice. Women's voices remain invisible and discounted, that is, not considered important even within their family and the community. And women's safety is still addressed from the perspective of morality and honor rather than from the rights perspective. Women have a right to be safe in their homes, workplaces, and public places. But it seems my safety is my responsibility and it depends on what I wear, where I go, when I go, with whom I go, rather than the responsibility of the state and the society. I know I am privileged. I am educated, live in big city, and I have access to all the basic amenities. I speak at least one international language apart from other Indian languages. I have access to media and information, etc. But now imagine how much more difficult it is for women who are marginalized on account of their disability, sexuality, caste, ethnicity, religion, migrant, refugee status, geographical location, etc. What makes it more difficult is that we are witnessing a rise of the traditionalist and right-wing politics across countries around the world. It concerns me that the world is increasingly becoming intolerant, polarized, with hate, misinformation, disinformation, with communities pitted against one another, where citizens' dissenting voices are being repressed and silenced by governments across the world. An atmosphere of fear and threat of violence makes gender equality many times more difficult. But I see hope in the fact that we are also witnessing brave voices of young women who refuse to be silenced and are publicly standing up and speaking out for their rights. We need to stand together as women from across the generations. One message that we must send out loud and clear is, we will be defined by our abilities and not by our gender. As I sign out, thank you and best wishes to you all. Bye-bye.
Hello, lovely listeners of Radio Laura. I'm so happy to be able to send you this International Women's Day greeting. My name's Sonia. I'm a media freedom activist from Malaysia and a feminist, and have been involved in community radio for about 25 years now. This year's been an interesting one already for Malaysian activists. We've had a fantastic judgment by the court overturning a state-based law which criminalised same-sex activities and relationships. That has been a really powerful moment in galvanising the LGBT community together. Unfortunately, it has, of course, resulted in quite a backlash as well, personal against the judges involved, but we expect to see a wider backlash against the LGBT community in Malaysia. We've had ups and downs over the past 12 months. It's the anniversary of a shattering change of government that happened in 2018, but that was overturned just over a year ago now, with implications for democracy, implications for freedom of speech, and of course every single one of those has an impact upon women. We're looking forward to deepening our work this year on issues to do with media freedom, on issues to do with the right to information, on community media especially. And we look forward to having a really spirited message to be able to send to you next year as we have the fruits of our labour, the ongoing struggles, making some headway over the next 12 months. Stay strong in these hard times, stay safe, and keep up fighting the good fight. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, dear audience of Radio Laura. My name is Yiping. I speak with you from Beijing, China, my hometown. This is a great opportunity to celebrate the International Women's Day on the 8th of March. This is so special for all of us as a woman, as people who are concerned about gender equality, as trans women, as genderqueer people. This is a very unique day that we remind us about our dream for a world that everyone can enjoy the justice, enjoy the equality with no discrimination. And we still have a long way to go. I just want to share with you some of a story about the women in China, what the challenge we face and what the struggle that we're now fighting. Maybe you know that Chinese women has comprised the highest participate in the labor force. However, equal pay for the work of equal value, it's still a struggle. And we have observed the increasing gap in terms of their payment, let alone the unrecognized, underpaid or no paid care work that's shouldered by women. Women in China only comprise less than one quarter of the seats in parliament. We still don't have a quota that minimum one third of the seats preserved for women. As UN has advocated for, the target for women's political participation should be 50 to 50. We still have a long way to go. In terms of the progress, we also very proud after the decades of joint efforts on the domestic violence law. 5 years ago, finally, we have adopted this law and start to implement this law. So 5 years later, many of the women's organizations, including All China Women's Federation, the women NGO groups, working together along with the lawyers, the judge, and the police, trying to put this law in practice. However, we still have the cases that exposed to the media on the women that suffered from the domestic violence, sexual violence, and all other forms of abuse, psychological abuse, physical abuse, and economic control. The International Women's Day, now we are trying to expand it to the International Women's Month so that we can raise awareness about the importance of the women's rights issue and its relevance to the overall well-being of the society, of the full potential that the people can fulfill in their life, regardless of their gender and the sexual orientation. This is a very important moment that we celebrate our gains and we remind ourselves about the continued struggle that we still need to work together. Yesterday, I met some friends, including the lawyers who work with rural women to claim the rights of women to land in the last 20 years, trying to defend her own land rights. And now she's defending the rights of her daughter. I think all these women and their commitment make this International Women's Day so meaningful. I'm so glad you're listening to my message. I feel like we're connecting with each other, even though we're not able to see each other's face, but I can sense that you also trying to do your work in your region. I feel like we're very close comrades. So let's celebrate together and get inspired from each other. All the best for your life and for your work. Bye.
Thank you, Radio Laura, for this opportunity to air my message on the occasion of Women's Day. Warm greetings to all women of the world. This is Mary Carling, manager of Radio Sagada Philippines. After several decades, the realization on women's role in development remains on paper. Laws and policies have not been translated into actions. Issues of inequality at all levels of political processes have not been comprehensively and genuinely addressed. Recently, in the Philippines, President Rodrigo Duterte declared that women are not fit in the highest position of the government. This is a sweeping statement that outrightly rejects the right and role of women in all levels of governance. In several media groups, women are harassed or imprisoned by the state forces because of their courageous voice. Within the women's sector, education and empowerment is an immense task. In all walks of life, this empowerment should be demonstrated with vigilance. We remain undaunted in the face of many challenges to the rights and welfare of women. In the community radio of Sagada, we ensure the participation of women in its governance. No doubt, the skills, knowledge, and abilities of women in the radio is accounted for. We encourage their full participation. No endeavor is attained without their meaningful participation. Mabuhay kayo. Long live.
This is Birgitte calling from Denmark to greet you all on this particular day of ours, the 8th of March, the International Women's Day. What is happening in Denmark that is of relevance to all of us? Well, I can say that whereas we had the sense here that some of our major challenges were the lack of equal pay for equal work and the lack of enough women in the boardrooms and in the decision-making positions. Suddenly, a year and a half ago, the whole tsunami of information and documentation and cases and stories came forward of misbehavior in the corridors of businesses and political parties. Some had been going on and that should be stopped. It was clear to all. but that the size and the amount and the gravity and the variation of all of this misconduct, starting from unwanted sexual attention to much graver things and power plays, was surprising and terrible. In all its gravity, it's wonderful that it's coming forward. A lot of new rules are set up in organizations, new legal lawyers, boards that you can contact if things are happening around you to yourself or to others that you observe, where you can have a neutral treatment of your situation. These situations of non-disclosure agreements and settlements that apparently have been very common everywhere can stop. It has been very sad and terrible realization, but it's so good that it's all come forward, that we've all now aware, and that the women who didn't know what to do have also gained the power to go public. I don't think the corridors in the workplaces and in our parliament will be the same again, and I don't think they can. So this is very positive development in our part of the world, despite all the ugliness and gravity and power grabs that it reflects. So with this news from Denmark, have a good celebration. Enjoy yourselves and each other. Happy International Women's Day.
On Wings, you are listening to International Women's Day greetings and updates from women around the world, collected for broadcast by Bianca Miglioretto from Community Radio LoRa in Zurich, Switzerland.
Hi. This is Bianca from Radio LoRa in Switzerland. The COVID-19 pandemic makes the blatant injustice of this world even clearer. Poor people in the global south suffer much more from government measures, are more vulnerable to infections, and have less access to healthcare, not to mention the chances of a vaccination in the near future. Patriarchy and the capitalist economy are pushing women back into their traditional roles. Women struggle for the economic survival of the family, take care of the children during lockdowns, do most of the paid and unpaid care work, and suffer from increasing sexual violence. The pandemic must not be fought on the back of women for the benefit of the economy. Profits must not be put above healthcare for all. Let us strengthen each other in the boundless feminist struggle for a better world. I wish all of you a motivating and strong International Women's Day. March 8 is every day.
Bianca has done a great deal of community radio training around the world, and she is fluent in quite a few languages. For the broadcast in Zurich, she translated all the greetings into German. The next two greetings she collected are in Spanish, one from Spain and one from Mexico. I will do my best to summarize the content.
Durante el 2020 en España se registraron 83 feminicidios y otros asesinatos a mujeres.
In 2020, there were 83 femicides and assassinations of women in Spain.
La crisis del coronavirus no ha tenido las mismas consecuencias para las mujeres que para los hombres.
Coronavirus is affecting women differently from men.
Son ellas quienes más han sufrido los efectos adversos de la pandemia, dado que más del 50% de su empleo está en sectores.
More than half the employees who lost jobs to the pandemic are women, whose jobs are in business, education, health, and social services. At the current rate of gains, it will take 105 years to close the wage gap. Women in Spain take to the streets on March 8th, but the struggle for women's rights must be daily in order to come together for equality.
Pero la lucha por el feminismo tiene que ser a diario para que juntas podamos llegar a la igualdad. Informa Xela Falgueras desde Radio Televisió de Cardedeu.
Hola, les saluda Maru Chávez de México. Soy integrante de CIPAM, Salud Integral para la Mujer, una organización feminista que empezó a transmitir, producir programas con contenido feminista.
Maru Chávez belongs to the group CIPAM, which has been producing feminist content for public radio in Mexico City since 1991.
Y desde 1994 que nos asociamos a la AMARC, hemos estado trabajando en pro del derecho de las mujeres a comunicar y en pro de posicionar los derechos de las mujeres en otras radios comunitarias.
Since 1994, they have been active in AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, where they work on women's right to communicate and on positioning women's rights within the community radio movement.
Además,
now they share a license for Radio Violeta, the first feminist community radio in Mexico. Radio Violeta plays women's music and uses the radio to raise awareness of women's rights. On March 8th, they are making the point that Mexico has now had radio for 100 years, and this is the first feminist station. They see themselves as adding a counterweight to the male-oriented patriarchal content of the other stations.
Consideramos que es un medio de comunicación importante para hacer contrapeso a los contenidos machistas patriarcales de otros medios de comunicación. Por tanto, celebramos la palabra de las mujeres y de las personas de la diversidad sexual también. Que viva la radio, que vivan las mujeres. Que viva la radio comunitaria y que viva el 8 de marzo.
Here are more of the greetings shared with Wings by Bianca Miglioretto of Radio Lora in Zurich, Switzerland.
Hi, my name is Nur Hasana from Community Radio Network for Democracy or Jaringan Radio Komunitas untuk Demokrasi in Indonesia. On the commemoration of International Women's Day this year, I would like to invite every woman in everywhere to choose the courage to speak out for all of forms of violence and injustice around them. Every woman has freedom, has the right to be treated fairly, and has the right to be herself, without coercion or pressure from anyone. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nico from Indonesia. Wishing you health, safety, and compassion during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm a working mom of three daughters. As a social activist, I know the fact that number of domestic violence cases reported increased since COVID-19 pandemic. Women in Indonesia become more vulnerable than before since domestic burdens increase due to the pandemic. They have to turn into their children's private tutors as well as managing household. They juggle multiple responsibilities at the same time. When they not deliver, they get violence from her partner or superior member of family. Today, when we celebrate International Women's Day, we will celebrate the equality and remind that women have right to decision-making in all areas of life, equal pay, equal sharing of unpaid care and domestic work, and end all forms of violence against women and girls. We deserve it. Thank you.
And that was some borrowed content from Wings, a Canadian broadcast that kindly lets other radio show, community radio shows across the world borrow their content. And that was an International Women's Day greeting from this year, spanning the world, really. Thanks again to Wings for that. And you've been listening to In the Motherhood here on CKUT 90.3 FM. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email inthemotherhood@ckut.ca or find us on Facebook at CKUT-InTheMotherhood. Thanks and have a great night.
Good evening and welcome to Amanda here on CKUT 90.3 FM, your 1 hour show on African current affairs and analysis. Tonight, what beautiful special, something that really Doug was instrumental in putting together. So Doug, I'm going to let you take us in.
Well, we've been, and the listeners know this, we've been working on getting together the stories of old Canadian anti-apartheid activists. Some of them aren't that old. When are they?
No.
Anyway, and some of the old buds in Toronto from the SACTU Solidarity Committee, the South African Congress of Trade Union Solidarity Committee, which was an exemplar, in my view, of solidarity work with the trade unions and was a model solidarity group, were invited by the Toronto Workers History Project. Now, that's a sort of independent group of old activists, again, who are pulling together histories on all sorts of aspects of labor life in Toronto, immigrant workers, struggles, union struggles, strikes, and